Welcome to this week's episode of That Sound Podcast. I am your host, Luke Cassidy.
And I'm Gavin.
This week, the guest on our podcast is none other than Mr. Luke Preece. Luke is an art illustrator and designer for some of the biggest bands in rock music. He has designed posters and illustrations for some of the biggest music titans, including Metallica, Ozzy Osbourne, Slipknot, Queens of the Stone Age, Blink 182, and many others.
Strap yourself in, because this is a good one.
I hope you enjoy this week's episode. This week on That Sound Podcast, we have Luke Preece, the man behind the artwork for Metallica, Pantera, Blink 182, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies.
And many more.
Yeah. And
Luke, I'll tell you the truth. I became aware of your work from the Metallica collectors page.
And oh, cool. Okay.
And I was chatting to the guy that's head of the London, the Torn, Wayne Summers, and chatting to him.
Yeah, Wayne. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice guy. And I seen the artwork, and from a young age, I've always been into, I think you have, Luke, been into, you know, concert tees, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a badge of honor, you know what I mean? When you get to physically go to these shows, pick up the artwork. And when I seen your artwork, it blew me away, to be honest with you, man. It's really amazing. Especially, I think, the 72 Seasons, the one that toured last year.
That one seems to have gone down quite well with the fans of Metallica. I mean, I'm same as you. Growing up, I used to go to gigs and stuff as a teenager. The same thing. I used to just get there, want to get those t-shirts, you know.
Yeah. Because everyone's like, oh, you've been at that show. You've been, oh my God. You know, it's really like a badge of honor, isn't it?
It really is a badge of honor. Like you say, Gavin, and it's funny, I remember having a Metallica Club t-shirt from I was part of the Met Club back when I was, 13, 14. And I still have the one from 2014. And it changes color with the light. And it's white, but it's so cool, man. And people used to say all the time, it's like, where did you get that? Can I get one of them? I'm like, you got to be part of the club.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember, you know, my first gig when I was a teenager was Slayer and Machine Head.
Oh, nice, man, nice, what a lineup.
Nice.
I know, yeah. So it was Machine Head when they did their first UK tour and the Burn My Eyes run.
Yeah.
So at the time, no one knew. I didn't know who Machine Head were. They were just supporting Slayer.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can remember going, standing in line, getting the t-shirt, getting my Slayer t-shirt. And then the next day you'd go to school and you'd put your Slayer t-shirt on underneath your school shirt. And then at break time, you'd be like, I went and saw Slayer last night.
Yeah. Funny, I was just talking about Slayer last night.
Yeah, we were talking about Slayer last night. Gavin has a great story about a guy wearing a Slayer t-shirt to school.
So in my secondary school, it wasn't too strict, but it was strict enough, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there was always the metal heads in one corner, and there was the soccer guys and the football guys. And So the metal guys, I was shy enough to join in the metal guys, would say, but I knew them, but I didn't go head first at first. But this guy, Sean, like you, he must have got into Slayer and, decided to wear his t-shirt under his school uniform, took it off, and the principal is coming walking towards, and it was the one with the pentagon on it, you know?
Yeah.
The principal's like, what the hell is going on? And like started thinking that there was
devil worship.
Devil worship.
I had the Metallica Damage Inc. pin badge. You'd probably know better than me, but it was it's like the metal kind of one that the Metallica badges you can get.
Yeah.
So a 3D kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I had one, I put it on my school tie, and the teacher was like, you need to take that off. You could kill someone with that or something like that.
Yeah.
It's offensive. Which, yeah, maybe it could be seen as being offensive when you're like 12 years old or something. But
yeah, I was going to say you get away with a lot more these days at school. They can't tell you what to do, you know.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Luke, if you don't mind, can we go back to the start where it all happened for you from your early days to working with some of the biggest bands in the world?
Oh man. So I'm 43. How old am I? Once I got past 40, I forget how old I am.
Yeah,
I'm 44 this year. So I've been sort of working as an artist. Well, I started out as a graphic designer originally.
Yeah.
In my sort of early 20s. Graphic design, you know, doing illustration for a living back then was just not something, you know, I would have even thought about.
Yeah.
So I was just working for design agencies and that kind of thing. Out of college, and did that, sort of learned the ropes, you know, like kind of early versions of like Photoshop and that kind of stuff. Photoshop, I don't know what version it was, and it's a very early version.
Yeah.
Just kind of boring kind of graphic design stuff. And then, you know, always did illustration on the side. It was always illustration and music. So I was playing guitar since I was like 11 years old.
Yeah.
So because of that, I was really into metal music, you know, Metallica and...
Were you playing metal music as a guitar player, or what kind of stuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like Metallica, Judas Priest, Sabbath.
Yeah,
awesome.
You know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Faith No More, Pantera. And
nice.
Stuff I was into as a kid. That was just something that was, I never thought about that as an art thing. It was just something I was just into. Graphic design was a day job as a junior, kind of went on, learnt from people on the job.
Yeah.
And then went around a few different, so I'm from the West Midlands near Birmingham.
Yeah.
So worked around a few studios in the West Midlands. And then I got my redundant and I bumped into a buddy of mine who I hadn't seen for a while. And he was working at 2000 AD Comics in Oxford.
Yeah.
So home to Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd, yeah.
Plane and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a graphic design position going, so I got a job there, working as a graphic designer. So I was commuting from the West Midlands to Oxford every day, doing that. And then what happened? I'm just trying to think, because it's such a... I mean, this is like, I'm trying to condense this down for you, because I know it's too long. Did that for like, you know, graphic design was a good sort of 10 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
So it was sort of from like late 90s into like, say, I don't know, 2011, something like that. And then from the company that I was working for, Rebellion, they also make video games. So the guys that own 2000 AD, they're a publisher of the comic books, but they also publish video games. So I ended up transitioning from that and then working in video games for a bit. So I worked as a UI artist and a concept artist on games for a bit.
Right.
And then whilst doing that, because I was drawing on like tablets and screens and stuff, it was kind of getting me back into my illustration work again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just started just doing my own stuff started doing my own little sort of, I guess you'd call it like fan art for things, you know, whether it might be like a movie or a band or whatever.
Some bands. Yeah.
And then, I got my first gig poster
saying that you worked for Faith No More?
No, that was just a fan thing. It's just a little fan thing.
But they picked it up?
No, it was never an official thing.
Okay.
And then from there, I just kind of just kept sort of doing it. And then I just sort of started to make connections in that world, I guess. And then eventually it kind of led to, I worked with Glenn Danzig, and then I worked on a few other things. Did a Guar poster and a few other bits and bobs. And then it kind of, the band that I always wanted to do stuff for was Metallica.
Yeah.
And I did an interview about a month or so ago, and I had a similar conversation. And because I couldn't remember how that connection came about, but it was I did a Q&A on Instagram.
Yeah, I seen that. Yeah, I read about that. That's nuts how powerful. Yeah, how powerful
social media in this day and age is just unbelievable.
And, well, I think it was just before the algorithm went mental. Yeah. And like, you know, it's like, it's really hard for people to get their work seen now. Whereas back then it was just, if people followed you, they'd see what you were doing.
Now it changes every hour by the looks of things.
Yeah, this is it. Also that, and so the people that make the screens that I use a digital screen made by Wacom. And they sort of essentially kind of ended up kind of endorsing me as an artist and started just giving me hardware to work on because they like my work.
Nice.
And then through that kind of like just spread the word about my work a bit more through them. And then I did this Q&A. And one of the questions that someone sent was like, what's your dream project you'd like to work on? And I said, I'd love to work with Metallica. And then a guy just got in touch with me and said, oh, let's speak about Metallica. And I was like,
wow.
Thinking, you know, this is bullshit. This is not a real thing.
If it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true, sort of.
Yeah.
Thing.
And then, yeah, exactly that. Yeah. And then it turned out that essentially he'd done some design work for them, like, not illustration work. I think he just like worked with their merchandiser on a few things, and then it turned out that like his connections were the people that I needed to speak to, which is the guys, if you know Probity.
Yeah.
Probity, you know, they look after
the UK merch.
It's all like the European, they do everything apart from North America.
Yeah.
So anything that you see from me that's done for Metallica is through them. I have done one piece for somebody else, which was the Phantom Lord artwork. That's the American side. They got in touch.
So from the get go, you were in heavy, like you're in the deep end, like.
Well, I think just because I'm genuinely into this stuff as well. No, yeah. I'm a huge metal fan. I think maybe that came through in the work in some way.
Yeah.
And it just sort of, I guess, came out of me naturally. Maybe as cheesy as that sounds.
Yeah.
And I just did, the first job I got was the And Justice for All 30th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which was like...
What a project.
What a project.
Yeah, like, yeah. No. And the massive
is just amazing on that poster. It's just, it's epic. Like it's...
You mean the black
yeah,
version?
Yeah.
That's I've got one here in the studio.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, it was one of those things where I worked on it and at the time sort of didn't really believe it was a thing until it was actually, even once I'd gone through all the approvals with management and stuff, I didn't even really sort of believe that it was actually going to be a thing until it was a thing. But once I'd seen it, like Metallica had shared it and said, I've done the work. I was like, right, okay, that's crazy. And then like now it's just like, I don't know, sometimes I have to sort of sit back and just sort of like check myself because I'm like,
I'm
working with Metallica a lot now. Ever since then, it's just been, you know, they're great to work with. That whole team, they look after me and they like the work I'm doing and I like working with them. And, you know, you get perks out of it as well. So me and my wife went to see them a few times on the guest list and it's cool. And we did the snake pit not that long ago at Donington.
I was listening to a podcast that you were on during the week and you were talking about the Donington experience, like, and again, that artwork is epic with the two knights. Oh my god, man, it's cool.
Oh, the four horsemen,
the four horsemen.
That's got to be my favorite one, the four horsemen.
Thanks.
And just how it pops,
thank you. Yeah,
what is your thought process as, like, you know, when you were given that job, we'd say, and even the justice job, like, what is your what's going through your head as you're processing, okay, I got this job. What? How do I start? Is there an image in your head, or is there? What are you listening to? What are you feeling? Do you listen to music as you draw, or?
I think I listen to music as I draw. Yeah, I do listen to music. Yeah, so I'm essentially still like listening to all the stuff I listen to. I listen to new stuff all the time, like newer bands, and I'm always checking things out.
Yeah.
But I'll always go. You're probably the same. I always just go back to that old stuff that I used to listen to. That's always.
Do you think it reflects your work, what you listen to?
Yeah, to get into that zone, yeah. But then sometimes, I just listen to podcasts as well.
Yeah.
Or I listen to like a movie soundtrack or
Yeah.
I listen to like a lot of like instrumental stuff. Actually, I sometimes just listen to quite chilled out stuff just to sort of.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes, in that headspace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I listen to stuff like the Cinematic Orchestra and stuff like that.
Hans Zimmer.
You know them. Yeah. That if you know Cinematic Orchestra. Yeah. It's just like just beautiful like strings and. Sort of, they're on Ninja Tune, so it's like bit sort of hip hop with like orchestral stuff. It's so, really like atmospheric. So I listen to a lot of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like the mindset has to be right, I suppose, for any job, I suppose. But when you have, you feel added pressure working for these bigger clients, the likes of Metallica or Pantera or somebody like, I seen you worked with Pearl Jam as well. I think I was I reading somewhere that you found it a bit tough to work. That to get a picture in your mind for that job for Pearl Jam.
Yeah, Pearl Jam because they're not a metal band.
Yeah, yeah.
They're more like sort of hard rock, kind of grunge or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know, because I'm so used to sort of doing stuff that's kind of dark and gritty, so I kind of didn't know how to approach that. And I actually thought, even when I'd finished the work, I was just like, I don't think people are going to be into this, and it won me an award, which was fucking weird.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Which I didn't, it's like the thing that you think it's not that great. Like,
yeah.
Because like, you know, I would say all creative people suffer from this imposter syndrome. Yeah. I get imposter syndrome. And I think, you know, anyone that's creating something,
yeah.
You know, even when I finished like a Metallica job, I'll still look at it and be like, I don't think it's,
yeah, no, trust me, man, it's good.
It's good. Oh, man, it's good.
But like, just to say, sorry, if anyone, we hope we have listeners here on air with us, but check out lukepriest.com as you're listening to this podcast. You'll see visually what we're speaking about, because Luke's work is not to be missed. Check it out as we're talking, and you'll understand what we're speaking about. So,
for anyone that's interested in art, for their studios, for their home, for their music room, anything at all, if you check out Luke's website and get some of those posters into your space. Yeah. You won't regret it.
Yeah, top class work. top class work. Sorry to cut over you there, Luke.
That's right. Cheers, guys. I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, so like with regards to like coming up with ideas for stuff, it's as you said earlier about that, how do you come up with the work that you do?
Mm.
I think I always approach things like, you know, I think there is that element of nostalgia that from being a fan, you know, like we were talking earlier about things you'd want to see on a t-shirt or whatever when you go to a gig, that kind of badge of honor thing.
Yeah.
I almost kind of approach these things like I almost kind of want to, if I can, try and make them feel iconic in a way.
Yeah.
You know, like if you look at like some of the old Pusshead stuff, everyone knows that work, everyone knows, and that's like, that's the thing that I think was really good with his Metallica work. In fact, all of his work, all the stuff that he did.
Yeah,
it was always very, even if you took the Metallica logo off it, just as a piece of artwork, it's almost like this, it's not a logo, but it's kind of like this.
It's iconic, something about it.
It just really popped, like, you know?
Yeah.
So I always kind of think about, I was trying, because obviously I've got years of like being a graphic designer.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of comes into it as well, as like what's going to pop and jump from the other side of the room, like that kind of.
Well, definitely, like, I see that in your poster for the 72 seasons. That color, that them bright colors kind of mixing together, and the
we had to have the yellow in there. The yellow was everything had to have yellow in it because of the album
cover. Just,
that was almost like I was told that was something that it had to have the yellow in there.
It works. It works. I think it really works.
It definitely works for sure.
And Hetfield kept going on about the yellow represents light.
Okay.
All the time, he'd be like saying like that that represents light. I don't know. He kept going about like, you know, in interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why there's that sort of uplight to the whole piece of art. So it's got like a yellow uplight that's lighting it all. So that's kind of like that came from what Hetfield was talking about.
When you're commissioned to do these projects, look, are you usually given a directive to follow solely, say that you have to follow everything, or is it mostly in that case of the 72 seasons where you're really given a blank canvas bar yellow? It's, you know, let's focus on yellow and do your thing.
Yeah. yeah, that was the only thing with that. Like, yeah, but for the most part, it's just like, we need some Metallica artwork for this thing.
Yeah, to make it. You didn't have you didn't have long to create that too, if I'm right.
No, it was a last minute thing.
Yeah.
It was, which is quite funny because it was almost like that was the first idea I had. I've got to do this thing quickly. It's got to relate to the album. Apparently they had a load of stuff, which is, I guess it's a compliment to the work, is they had a load of designs created and a lot of them got canned, and mine was the one that didn't get canned.
Nice.
That's
nice.
A testament to your work, man.
Which, yeah, thank you. Which is like, which I've never heard of with them, to be honest, because I don't know whether that's just unlucky, but whenever I've done stuff for them, I've not created, I don't think I've had anything canned. I think everything that I've done for them has been put out. I've not had one thing put in the bin.
Wow. You gotta be proud of that, man.
That's incredible.
I mean, to be honest, like the nature of like gig posters and stuff like that anyway, like it's normally like accepted that an artist is just going to kind of do their interpretation. So it's very rare, unless you just like do something that's massively offensive.
Yeah. Like, or unless you piss all over what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I got offered an AC/DC job the once, and it was like, I can't remember it didn't happen. Because I submitted a rough, because everything that they basically said, you can't, there's loads of stuff that you just can't put on the poster.
There was no freedom.
And it was just, there's no freedom. And it was like, what can I do then? So I just I did a rough of like an illustration of the band, like playing in front of a massive AC/DC logo, and that got rejected. And I was just like, oh, okay. But like, that's whenever you work on a piece of artwork, you always do a rough first. So it's not like you pour off weeks and weeks into a piece of artwork. It's like you spend like an afternoon coming up with a concept, you submit it very loosely, like a sketch, and they'll say yes or no.
Wow.
For the most part, people just say yes, and then you just go to final.
So. And then on the movie end of things, like you've worked on Jurassic Park, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, among many, many others. The freedom is obviously restricted then. You have to play within the realm of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't do as much movie stuff. I do get asked to do quite a bit, and I do actually turn down quite a bit of it, because if I'm not into the movie, I'm just not going to work on it. Well, it's just like I'm putting my name to something that I don't think I can really bring much to.
Right.
Or, yeah.
What would be one of your favourite items that you've done on a movie, poster-wise?
I think probably my favourite is my Jaws artwork.
Jaws. I think my favourite is the Jurassic Park, and I know you.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's the colour again. I think it's like the feel. Like we've all seen that movie when we were kids or whatever, and that scene in that kitchen. And I don't know what it is about the colour of the lighting that you used. It just, you can actually, it just made me feel cold, and just, you know, I just thought it brought a lot. It brought a lot of emotion to the picture.
There's two, which one? Because there's two colorways. Is the yellow version, the blue
yellow
version.
One. Sorry, the yellow one.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty damn cool. Yeah.
Yeah, because the blue version, we printed it with a glow in the dark ink on there as well.
Oh man, I see, that's sick. Yeah.
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles definitely had to be my favorite one.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, you know, I just kind of do films that I'm genuinely into. I'm working on some other film stuff at the moment. I can't tell you what it is, but
for sure,
it's stuff that I'm into.
Right.
So I'm doing a lot of work with, if you know the guys at Vice Press.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's the comic. Yeah.
They're a gallery.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. So essentially, a lot of the movie work, you work with a gallery that has the licenses.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's how it works. So. Yeah, so the Jurassic Park one was done with Zavvi, if you know Zavvi.
Yeah.
So they had the license through Universal. And Jurassic Park was that one, you know, I quite like the poster, and the idea behind it was I was trying to do something that hadn't been done before in a poster for Jurassic Park, because like everyone always does the T-Rex.
Yeah.
For the most part. and no one, I couldn't find anyone that had done as a movie poster hadn't done that sort of the Raptors.
The Raptors, the yeah.
And
yeah.
that was the scene that I loved when I was a kid.
That terrified me as a kid, that scene.
Yeah, same.
The claws. And you made the claws so big as well. I was like, wow, like it really brought me back to being a little scared boy.
The original drawings of the Raptors were a lot different on that. And then that's why I got a little bit burnt out on that project because it kept going back and forth with Universal. Change the teeth, change the claws, you know. It's just, that's what happens if you're working on
Lack of freedom, like we just spoke about, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the beauty of gig posters is you have a bit more freedom, but you just have freedom to just do what you want.
I seen some of your recent stuff there with Queens of Stone Age as well. They're touring Australia, right?
Australia and New Zealand,
The unicorn with the head is pretty cool as well. Where did that come from?
I don't know. They wanted it to be sort of based around the latest record.
Okay.
I think on the cover of that there's the guy's got like a bandage. He's got a red bandage or like blindfold around his head.
Okay.
With like a wolf's on him, on the back of his head. So I think it's quite sort of abstract.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted this sort of like desert rock kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, I was trying to tell a story with that. So I think if I do any more for them, it would just carry that story on. So there's two posters.
Brilliant.
Nice.
So I did the first poster and it was just the girl. So she was just like smoking a cigarette. And she's got a wolf skull on her head.
Yeah.
And she's holding the skull with the blindfold.
Yes.
So it's like a reference.
And then the
next scene is the New Zealand poster where she's actually got onto a unicorn.
Yes.
And then, I don't know where like this shit comes from.
Oh man, but that's the creative mind that you got, you know?
I'm not like doing mushrooms and then just drawing stuff.
No.
I did that one was quite wacky actually because I tried to add like this sort of weird narrative in there with this like who is she, is this character that I don't know. And then so she's got the cigarette in her hand, she's holding the skull the first place. And then what next one, she's got onto a unicorn, she's put the skull like on a on the saddle, hooked onto the horse.
Yeah.
And then she's like flicking her cigarette.
And then
riding off. And I think when I drew it, I just drew it as a horse and then I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna make it a unicorn.
I like that. Yeah.
That's
man.
Awesome.
You know, I like that. So
But that's the freedom you got, man. That's awesome that you have that freedom to do that, you know, and these bands are cool with it. Like, that's awesome.
It's like I said to you before, it's like, you know, I think where I am now, if someone had said to me, you know, sort of 15 years ago or whatever, when I was doing graphic design, this is what I'd be doing full time now.
Yeah.
I would have just said, like, that's not a thing.
That's
not a job. That's not, you know, it was never... What I do now is an accident in a way. It's just like I've just followed the passions that I've liked since I was a kid and just, you know, it was always music for a bit, playing in bands and stuff, and did that for like sort of about 8 years or something. And then just kind of, I got to pay the bills. So I just got a job doing which was the graphic design stuff, which then turned into illustration. So in a way, I've like fulfilled the musician thing through the art, if you know what I mean. So I'm getting to be creative, but I'm just doing it visually rather than like what you'd listen to.
I think it's definitely a good thing, Luke, that your work is a reflection of those statements, that when you do what you love or you're honest with what you do and your work is authentic, it really comes across in that manner.
Definitely.
And thank you. Yeah,
you know, it's unique.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to ask you about your creative process was, do you ever think of it from the fan's perspective? What would I like to see if this is what I was looking at for any of these bands?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said earlier, whenever I go into a project, I'm always thinking about like, what would I want to see? What would I want to wear? Like if it's a t-shirt or whatever. Yeah. I think I just try and do stuff because you get that freedom with the music stuff. I just try and do stuff that I'm into.
Yeah.
And then if I can attach that to the band in some way, I think especially with the Metallica work, I definitely try and put like a narrative into each thing. So I know that like fans of the band will identify with it, like how I would identify it with it as a fan.
Yeah.
So like the latest thing that I'm doing now is I'm just going through songs. Like I just like pick songs that I like, and I'm just like, well, no one's done a poster for this.
Ah.
So I always try and do it. So we did I did like a mini print that came in Metal Hammer magazine. That was just like a little nod to For Whom the Bell Tolls, because
yeah,
if you've seen that.
So yeah, like, actually, no, haven't done. Seen that. I must check that out. I'd love to see.
I love the one. I think the sad but true one.
I've got. They actually sent me some. I've got them here. Copies here. Yeah. So this one was like. Where is it? It's only a mini print. So it's not like a big screen print because it came free with the magazine. So yeah, this was just like a Who in the Bell Tolls.
Nice
man.
Thing that we do. The time marches on.
Yeah. Pretty cool, man. I like the color too. I love
the blue. Yeah, it's just it's very, very Ride the Lightning-esque.
Yeah, so that was it. Was the I think it's the anniversary. I think it was for the anniversary of Ride the Lightning. We did that. I think.
Yeah,
I believe Ride the Lightning's 40 years old this year.
I know. What's your favorite Metallica record?
Oh, that's such a tough choice.
I always love asking people this question.
My favorite how you rank artwork them. Has to be. Ride the Lightning, Justice, or Death Magnetic. I'm a big fan of the Death Magnetic artwork, but I think that ties into my Metallica journey. My first Metallica concert was in 2008.
Okay.
It was in August of 2008 in Dublin, and then they released Death Magnetic in the September. So I had got that record for my birthday and then just played it until the CD would play no more.
I think I saw them on that tour as well. In Birmingham,
I got to see them in an indoor gig on that tour in New Jersey in America, and it was
the first
and only time I see Metallica indoor, and the sound was amazing.
Luke, I often talk to people about this. Did you get to see them indoor in Birmingham on that tour?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, but well, the first time I saw them, go on.
I'll ask. The
first time I saw them was '95 at Donington.
So
I was 15. So I was 15. I had like hair like down here.
Yeah.
Just like my mom just like dropped me off and left me there with my mate for the day. And
Load, would it? Reload?
Yeah, Load.
It was just before Load came out. It was like the tail end of the Black Album.
Yeah.
And they were actually recording the Load album, and they came out of the studio to do a few.
Escape from the Studio tour.
From the Studio 95.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I saw them at Donington, and that was, it was amazing. But that whole lineup that day was amazing. It was like White Zombie, Courage Conformity, Machine Head, Burn My Eyes era Machine Head.
Yeah.
Who else? Skid Row, Therapy. We actually spoke about online.
We need to speak about some Irish bands, come on. We were chatting during the week, myself and yourself, about Curb Dog, and you sent me down a rabbit hole because I was speaking to a cousin of mine maybe 2 years ago, and he was telling me, do you ever hear these guys? Because he knows I'm into music, and he told me, you know, you got to check out these guys, Curb Dog. I said, I never heard of
Therapy.
There you go.
I'm just getting my vinyl out.
That first album from Curb Dog is savage. It's top class, man. There it is,
Curb Dog. There we go.
This is an original pressing as well.
Nice.
No way.
The vinyl's like the actual record. It's all wobbling. Yeah. But yeah, I saw them on. I don't know whether you watched it as well, but. We get this late night rock show in the night. It's called Noisy Mothers.
Okay.
Whether you ever watch that? But it was like on at like 2 a.m. and I just set the VHS player to record it. And what was the song that was on there? End of Green, which is the first song on that record.
Yes.
it was that. And it was around the time that Therapy, like Trouble Gum, was like the big record at the time, which was like arguably their biggest album. And Curb Dog was supporting them on that tour. So
I find that there's so much mix of genres in that album. It's like we were listening to it the other night.
Yeah, we had listened to it the other night.
And I could hear obviously it was around that time. It was that 94? Was it 90? What year was that album?
Yeah, 94.
You can hear kind of grunge. You can hear thrash metal. You can hear... I could hear like Alice in Chains coming through it. So many different...
A Helmet as well. I remember Helmet.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of like... It's a little bit of sort of, hardcore and thrash metal to it. And
yeah, there's grunge. Definitely... You can feel the move from thrash to grunge through that band, I feel.
The riff. Yeah, well, like, they were signed to Vertigo as well, which is like Metallica's label. They were signed to Vertigo, which is like Black Sabbath, Metallica.
Yeah. I just don't understand why they're not better known, to be honest.
The album after that, On the Turn, which was the more commercial kind of album, lent more into the grunge, I guess.
Yeah, it was the black album of Curb Dog.
Well, that is essentially solely, I mean... Don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that record is solely like responsible for a band like Biffy Clyro.
Okay, so
absolutely massive.
They always
talk about how Curb Dog was like a huge inspiration for them. The guy that produces their records is the guy that produced the Curb Dog record because they love the sound of that record.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
It's gnarly, like, isn't it?
And I just don't know that no one like talks about Curb Dog. I'm like, how is no one talking about Curb Dog?
I was just about to say that.
Yeah,
there's so many people locally to us, Luke, that absolutely love Biffy Clyro.
Yeah,
and then
they're a great band.
They wouldn't know who Curb Dog are.
No, I know. Well, I think
they're Irish.
I think because I went to see Curb Dog. They did like they reformed and did like they did a tour. Just played like small venues around the country. Mm-hmm. In the UK, in
Leeds,
England.
I think. And they've done a couple of small venues, right? I've seen that.
Yeah, they did Birmingham. I saw them at Birmingham, and I got talking to the drummer online,
and he
just put me on the. I was just like, I'm a massive fan, and like he's like, oh, I'll stick you on the guest list. It's fine. I was like, oh, nice. Amazing.
Yeah. Legend.
And. Yeah, so went and saw them. It was so funny as well because they were playing all the classic songs that I remember from those records. And it was like they were having a band practice on stage because they hadn't like really rehearsed for the tour. They were just like all got that together. And we're like, can we remember this one? Sort of thing, the way they were playing. But it was like, it was just coming out of them naturally. It was so cool to see them. And I saw them like when I was a teenager, like at Reading Festival, like in a tent, like back in the 90s when these albums were out.
Yeah, there's so many hidden. I'm not saying that Curb Dog were obviously played massive festivals and massive gigs, but for our generation, like, it's a shame that people my age and your age should be proud of these guys and should know them, should listen to them, should check them out.
They're not aware of these bands, the caliber, the talent that came out of this country.
Well, Therapy as well. I mean, like Trouble Gum, that record is so good.
Yeah. Graham Hopkins as a drummer altogether is just incredible.
Well, who's the original? The original drummer, is it Fife? Was the original guy?
Okay. I'm not aware of who the original guy was. I should be more up to date on that.
No, it's fine. It's
Graham's run.
Yeah, because like it's obviously they've got the new guy now. That must be Graham. Okay. I don't know him. But then, the original guy was a guy called Fife, and yeah, he was left-handed drummer as well. So he always had that. I always remember he had like two snares that he'd play with. He'd have like his normal snare, and he'd have like a little like
thin,
like
snare.
A low snare. Yeah, little side snare for. They had a track called Teeth Grinder, and he plays it on that. If you listen to that track, you can hear it on that. But they're a great band, and I saw them that year with Metallica. They were like main support that day in '95 at Donington.
So that was a real, real good experience for you.
Oh, yeah. It was like 100,000 people in a field, and Andy Cairns is like, Metallica let them use the snake pit ramp.
Oh, okay.
No way.
To walk out into the crowd. So Andy Cairns is just like rocking out. It was so cool. He's like a heavy metal Morrissey, isn't he? I think. Andy
Big time.
like a punk rock Morrissey.
Yeah. But how cool is that, Luke, that you were there in '95 as a fan, and then you go back and you're there with your wife and you're looking around at your artwork on these giant screens with thousands of people, thousands of people wearing your t-shirt, you got to be going, what the
pinch me
fuck?
Oh yeah, like I was absolutely, what the fuck is going on? With that? I remember that day. We got guest list for the day. We turned up and we got into like the kind of guest list bit at the back, behind the stage. I didn't meet Metallica. I reckon I could have met them if I wanted to, but I just at the end, I was just so knackered by the end of the day. I just wanted to kind of get back home.
Oh man, I would have walked to America to meet them.
Yeah, I'd swim. Yeah. Would you want me back?
But like, yeah, it was. I've met like everybody else around them. Pretty.
Yeah,
much,
yeah, I understand. Yeah,
like all the people that I work with. But and then I met with a guy there who's working with them, who got me my. Like it was one of those, like, here's his phone number, give him a text or whatever, he'll meet you, whatever. Yeah. So I met this guy, Scotty, his name is, lovely guy. He like runs all the merch and stuff for them. And he'd like, yeah, gave us our snake pick passes. And that weekend as well, I went with my wife, but we also met a couple of friends there as well. They were there the whole weekend.
Yeah.
And it was my friend's birthday. So I said to him, like, so he's going to give us 2 snake pit wristbands. I was like, can I get 4? Because I want a couple for a couple of mates. So I surprised him as well on his birthday with passes. Nice. So he was just like almost like cried at me because I gave him his passes.
Yeah.
And he saw Metallica there in '85.
Wow, man!
On the Ride the Lightning, James Hetfield and Cliff playing and everything. He saw that, like, you know, James when he was like all like ripped jeans and his whole high tech. High-tech boots on.
That Gibson Explorer.
All that, like, that famous, like, you know, Ride the Lightning gig, he was there for that. So I was cool. We just stood with him, watching it all happening. Like, Hetfield was literally, like,
there. The closest.
Flicked his plectrum, caught his plectrum.
Oh, nice. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I've got it. Just,
oh, man, that's something.
In my trophy cabinet, yeah.
The closest me and Luke got to Snake Pit was we got the gold circle at Slane Castle. In
oh, Kent. Nice.
Yeah. And
in 2019.
2019, yeah. We got pretty close because the ramp comes...
at the barrier for where the border of the Snake Pit was.
Yeah.
We have some incredible pictures.
Yeah.
Like, it was unbelievable that when Hetfield played his 58, Les Paul, like, you could see the flame on it. You know, he's like 10 foot away and you're just like, unbelievable.
Yeah. We could actually hear Lars's snare hit before it hit the snare.
Yeah, we could hear the drums in real time before it came through the PA. Like slight latency, but it was unbelievable, like the sound of it.
Yeah.
Like, he hit so hard for a guy of his age, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a drummer myself and I will always defend Lars. I can't
get Lars
slack online. At all.
Oh, no.
I'm not a fan of that. But
same. I think people are just, I don't know, people are just bored on the internet.
The whole Napster thing, he gets a dig, especially after all that, Craig.
You know, Metallica, like James and Lars, that's like, Metallica would not be Metallica without them two together. If it was a different drummer who was like ridiculously technical, it just wouldn't be Metallica anymore.
But Lars' knowledge is insane.
Oh, Lars' knowledge is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
He is like such, you know.
He's an encyclopedia of music.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's basically the producer. Mm. Like, Lars is the song structure man. You know?
He's the business side as well.
Oh, yeah.
I love that part of one of the documentaries. I think it was from the Black Album. Luke, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. I think,
year Jason, and a half in the life of Metallica.
Yeah, it was either that or another one where Jason was asked a question about Lars and about something to do with maybe not being around as such for some of the rehearsals and bits and pieces or all of the sound checks and all of these sort of things. And his answer in typical Lars fashion was like, man, if you knew what I had to do to make sure this whole thing runs smoothly, you would not trade places with me. Just the businessman.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Luke, what bands would you like to work for that you haven't worked for already?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I'd like to do something a bit different. Like, I'd like to do, like, The Prodigy is someone I quite like to work with.
Oh, yeah, man. I seen The Prodigy. Oh, my God. What year was that? Maybe...
You see them at Oxygen?
I seen them at it was a festival in outside Dublin called Oxygen. And who was headlining that day? I think it might have been Audio Slave or someone. And Prodigy were like the late, late set. And as we were walking back to the tents, we could just see these strobe lights coming from one of the far stages. We're like, who is that? And we're like, holy shit, it's Prodigy. We forgot all about them. Man, it was one of the best shows I ever seen in my life.
Oh, they're amazing live, yeah.
Like, it was amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, because I growing up, I was always a metal kid. But I do delve into like other genres of music.
Yeah, I'm the same. I could listen to metal. I could listen to rap. I could listen to dance.
Same. I think everyone just thinks that I just listen to metal and that's it. That's the work that I do. But I also that's why I say like I quite like to do some the other stuff that's not in that world. Maybe it's in
so Prodigy.
But then you'd still say like. A band like Prodigy, you know, they are heavy. You know, it's it's still, I always like music that's heavy, that's got some sort of hook, like a heavy riff to it. And like, I think Prodigy, they're like a heavy metal dance band, aren't they, in a way?
Yeah.
It's like industrial sort of dance music.
So imagine that I'm calling you and I'm offering you a job to work on Prodigy. Obviously it's not the same, but Prodigy's concert coming up in 6 months. Have you an image instantly in your mind of roughly something small even that you could even, like how your mind works? I'm trying to get inside there to see how it would work.
I guess the one thing that always springs to mind with them is the whole amp thing. They have the Prodigy amp, don't they? Like maybe something that relates to that, or I don't know, the it'd be I couldn't on the spot tell you what
I was just trying
but to it would be it'd probably end up being like similar to other stuff I've done, but
does the location of where the show like, let's say for instance, obviously say going back to Queens of the Stone Age, the fact that they're in Australia, New Zealand, does that obviously influences the style of your drawing, or does it matter?
What's that? The location?
Yeah, like the fact that they're in Australia, does that come into your illustrations at all, or New Zealand? The fact, I was just thinking like the horse and the kind of barren land, and did that
maybe a little bit, yeah. Maybe not always. So like with Metallica, it mostly tends to be like songs. So like, I always just think about it with like songs. But like with like, for example, Pearl Jam.
Yeah, I was going to say
when I was struggling with Pearl Jam, where the gig was in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah, Texas. Yeah.
And so I just started like looking at the location, like what's the location famous for? And they're famous for these huge like horned like bulls.
Yeah.
Which they like dates back like hundreds of years or whatever. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well I'll just like do a really pissed off bull. That was kind of.
Yeah,
that was kind of where that idea kind of came from. Blink 182 wasn't like location based. That was again. I don't know if you saw that. I think that's actually probably one of my favorite sets of posters I've done recently, because it came out a lot better than I imagined. And I think the color choices with that one really like the colors felt Blink 182 with that like kind of really bright blue. And there's so many layers to that artwork that normally when I look at something that I've done, I can be like, I don't really know what I'm trying to say with this. Whereas with that one, I kind of, it's quite layered in the meanings. If you actually
absolutely
look at it,
yeah, I've seen it. I see with the punk hair and all that. Yeah, yeah.
The inspiration for that was the song I Miss You.
Yeah.
And in the lyrics in that song, it's like they're talking to someone that's dead. That's how I read into it.
Okay.
So the way I look at it is like, it's like he's dead and she's talking to him, but they're talking to each other through their phones,
like
texting each other. And especially, I don't know if you've looked at the poster in detail, but each phone has the lyrics on from the song.
Yeah, so yeah.
One's the first verse, the other's the second verse. Yeah. So it's like they're talking to each other through that. And like, that was kind of the thinking with that. That one, I think I was just pleased with the meaning behind it.
Yeah,
and it turned up in the video for one of their songs as well. There's like a video, like some, they did like when they toured, someone sort of said to me, oh, did you know that your posters have turned up and you can see the band like signing them in a some sort of backstage.
Cool. That's awesome.
It's quite cool.
Yeah, I see him with the Pantera one you done for New York. The colour in that too is amazing. And the almost like the drill bits for the skyscrapers.
Yeah. That was a fun one. Yeah. That was because that one didn't have much time to do that one.
A couple of my buddies were at that show. They said it was epic too. They've seen that everywhere.
Funnily enough, I've been speaking to the drummer.
Charlie
from Anthrax, yeah. He weirdly, this is completely coincidental, but he messaged me online because he liked my Jaws poster. Because he's a massive Jaws fan.
Okay.
And he just sort of said, "Oh, I love that Jaws poster you've done. Can I get one?" I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, I'll get you one. It's fine." And I said, "Well, I'm thinking about coming to see a Pantera show. If you come to the UK, I'll bring one to the show for you if you want."
Yeah.
And I can't say what he told me because he told me something. But yeah,
yeah.
He just said, "Send it to my address at home, blah blah blah," and then so basically he just said, like, you know, keep talking to me and I'll put you on the guest list for the Pantera show. So I'm gonna go and see them, but they're playing Donington, but I think there might be some other dates that they might be doing, but I can't confirm that.
That's incredible. I know Charlie is a huge comic book and a huge horror fan.
Yeah that's right, yeah, great drummer as well.
Yeah,
he seems like a cool guy. I mean, like, he just messaged me and then I was like, oh, coincidentally, I've already done work for you guys and you're using it as a stage.
Yeah.
And they've animated it on behind the stage on the
team. Yeah, I've seen it. Awesome.
Yeah, so that was the artwork for the Yokohama gig. Did you see that? I did a few years back.
Oh, no, I didn't check that one out. I must check that out.
No, I didn't see it either.
Yeah, so that one was originally done for a poster for the, you know, the final show, basically. It was like to commemorate the last ever Pantera show, the original lineup.
Yeah.
So I did, we did that. We released that poster. They're sold out now. But but they then took the artwork and then blew it up for this tour, and it's all animated on the screen behind me.
Wow.
I think it's when they play Mouth of War.
Wow. I'd love to see Pantera. I never got to see them.
Yeah, which funny, I was going to go and see them. I was going to go and see them back in the day, and then for some reason, me and my buddy went to see Incubus the same night. We had tickets. It's like early Incubus.
Yeah, okay.
It's like Incubus when they were a bit like more metal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Incubus are a great band.
They have a very distinctive sound that, like,
yeah,
1 second of the song, you're like, ah, yeah, that's Incubus.
It was like Make Yourself era.
Yeah.
Incubus.
Yeah.
And we went to see them there at Nottingham Rock City, but that same night, Pantera were playing. And we were going to get tickets. Then we realized that me and my buddy were like, oh, we're going to the Incubus that night. Oh, well, maybe we'll just go see Pantera next time. And then obviously, and we know what happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We were just chatting to a guy, another Irish guitarist. His name is Pat McManus. He was in Mama's Boys. They were a big band back in the day too. And he was rubbing shoulders with Pantera back in the day, and it was funny, he was telling us like that they were like a glam rock band back then.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Right. Yeah. So he's like the power metal era.
Yeah. Yeah. Before Phil, I think, came in, and that they were like, he says, like, Dimebag was like glam rock and like completely.
They were all like sort of Motley Crue.
There was a great Bandex story, Luke, that they talked about. They were sound checking for a gig. Pantera was the support. They had been in Texas and they weren't the local band that were playing support, and they were trying to sound check, and one of the guys had said, "Can you tell those guys to turn down Van Halen?" And one of the guys said, "Van Halen's not playing. That's the guitarist over in the corner warming up."
Yeah, that's your support act opening for you. And he's like, "Oh shit."
You know, I always think it's so funny with Pantera. It's like, that's how they sort of started out, like this sort of glam kind of metal band. And then I've read Rex's book. I don't know if you've read that. It's really good. I recommend that.
The Bass Player, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. His book's really good. He tells you loads of stories and stuff. But like, I think he says in that book that at that time, like the Black Album came out, and the Black Album essentially changed the sound of metal like overnight, didn't it? It like kind of took this sort of thrash metal sound,
yeah,
and brought it to the masses.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of like the old school Metallica fans hate on the Black Album.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I think it's
me personally. I love it. It's like, it is the record that got me into Metallica when I was a kid.
Me too.
Definitely.
Me too. It opened my eyes to it. But I think I know you asked earlier, I think my favorite album is Justice. And I know everyone shits on Justice too. Oh, there's no bass.
No. So, Ride the Lightning and Justice for me are like on par with each other.
Black.
And then it was like Master of Puppets after that.
Puppets and Justice. And then Black Album. Yeah. Would likely be mine if I had to choose the Desert Island album. It would either be Justice or Puppets.
All day long.
Depends on the day.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that sound, what we're talking about, to me, when I think of that sound for drums or guitar or anything, it's got to be the Black Album. And one intro in particular has to be the heaviness in The God That Failed.
Yeah.
Just the space and that absolute thud and crack of the snare
drum. But you'll love the drums sound absolutely massive, don't they? They sound just huge. But that dictated the sound of metal, I think, after that. That record came out and it just like kicked the doors open and everyone's like, fuck me, it sounds huge. And then everyone just tried to make their record sound like the Black Album.
Yeah.
I've been saying this for years. This like, as much as people give it shit.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck you. Like, the Black Album, like, completely changed the sound. And it kind of, if it wasn't for the Black Album, you would not have the bands that get radio play now, like the Slipknot, like that.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of made that alternative scene. It brought it, yes, okay, people say, oh, yeah, Metallica sold out because they had their album produced by Bob Rock.
Mm.
But it's like, no, like, this did so much good for that scene. And that's what my original point was. It's like after that, that's when Pantera changed their sound, because they sort of, obviously Pantera sound like Pantera, but the Black Album came out, and I think that definitely inspired what came next for them.
Well,
after
definitely
that, after that glam era, they changed. Which is when like
Dimebag like, sound is so distinctive, like you're not gonna miss that. You know?
Oh,
what I mean?
God, yeah,
it's Dimebag.
And they took that Metallica sound and somehow made it sound even bigger.
Yeah.
Like even the guitar sounded even chunkier. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was something I was going to draw a comparison to in the line of authenticity and honesty in the work, that it's ironic that you end up working with a band, Luke, that when you had said earlier, if you take the Metallica logo away for Pushhead's work, you'll instantly recognize what it is. Or, you know, if you hear Kirk Hammett or James Hetfield play guitar, or if you hear Lars play the guitar, you know who it is.
Yeah.
And the same when you see your artwork.
Yeah.
If you tuck the logos away, you're going to be like, oh man, that's Luke Preece.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, thanks,
yeah, there's distinction. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of, it's kind of like people say to me, like, oh, how did you find your style? You know, it's like, I don't think I ever really sort of tried to aim for a style. It's just kind of like just what kind of comes out, I guess, in the work.
Yeah.
Because like outside of the work that I do, like you know, I do painting and stuff like that, but I just don't share. I don't share any of that. I do like actual literal like painting work, like where I'm, you know, I'm painting acrylics or I'm painting oils, or I don't do it very often. But
are you absolutely thing that I do. Like? Are you so busy right now working with like? How busy are you on a scale of 1 to 10? 12?
I'm busy like to the end to the like. I've got work pretty much up to September at the moment.
That's great, man.
And it'll just keep trickling in. I've got, you know, like outside of the band stuff, you know, I do like freelance for video game studios as well. So I still do that as well. And that kind of work, you know, it's similar because the work I'm doing is, they're hiring me for my illustration work, so the styling, I can't tell you what it is.
I understand.
Yeah, no, but, for sure.
Yeah, but you know, I'm doing that sort of work. I'm doing
Metallica have a big tour coming up too. I hope to see some of your work there. Myself and Luke are going to...
We're
going
to go to Madrid.
Madrid. We're going for the two nights in Madrid.
Okay. You're not going to France then?
No, to Hellfest.
Yeah, just wondered. No. Just thought I'd ask.
Okay. I hear you.
Yeah.
Unless an opportunity presents itself down the line.
We're actually going to catch Pearl Jam as well. They're playing the
At the Mad Cool Fest.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have Pearl Jam on the Thursday night, Metallica Friday.
On
Saturday to get our breath, and then Sleep Metallica Saturday. Again on Sunday.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm jealous.
Yeah, it's my birthday weekend too. Yeah. So.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to that. Luke, before we go, if you don't mind. I think you'd answered one of these already. Just if you don't mind answering a couple of questions before we wrap it up, sure. Is that cool with you?
Yeah, of course.
First and last concert you attended?
First, I think I've already spoken about this. The first proper gig I ever attended was Machine Head and Slayer. So it was Slayer Divine Intervention Tour, 94, 95.
Nice.
At Wolverhampton Civic Hall. Paul Bostoff was drumming for them then.
Nice.
Supported by Machine Head. I remember when Machine Head came on, they were just so terrifying.
Oh yeah.
I just remember they were like that era when it had like Logan Madden playing guitar for them and Chris Kontos was playing drums.
Yeah.
They were like just terrifying.
That double bass, man, we seen them in Dublin 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago happened to be on my birthday, but that was one of the loudest gigs ever at.
Yeah, who else was playing that day? Amon Amarth.
Yeah, Amon Amarth.
And who else? Was there someone else?
Oh, I'm trying to think who the other band
was. Another loud concert we were at was Gojira in Belfast.
I saw them in London not that long ago.
Incredible. What a show.
Did Employed to Serve support them with Alien Weaponry?
Alien Weaponry, yeah.
And Employed to Serve as well? That would have been the opening band?
I don't think we caught them.
We could have been late. We caught...
Female fronted?
No, we didn't catch Alien
them.
Weaponry are damn good.
Yeah.
Because
the guys Employed to Serve, they're sort of buddies of mine. Okay. I did their record sleeve for the last album.
Oh, nice.
So I went to see them and Gojira.
Yeah, Gojira are heavy, man. Mario on the drums, man. He's epic.
Yeah, and I had like a weird night that night because afterwards we did the whole watch them, managed to get backstage and a bit of a chat with everyone. And saw the Gojira guys wandering around and stuff.
Nice.
Chatted with the Alien Weaponry guys as well.
Yeah, they seem like cool guys.
I remember sitting next to them on the bus and just being like, man, the drummer, like he was talking to us, and I'm like, he looks about 18 or something. I'm like, man, I'm almost like old enough to be your dad. It just made me feel old. They were lovely guys.
But I remember that song, the song with the siren going off. Man, Jesus Christ, it was a good show in Belfast.
It was something else.
I
went off on a tangent there.
No, it's fine. I did this all the time. Latest gig was. What was the latest gig? I think it was. Do you know what? I think it was. No, it wasn't Gojira. It was actually Employed to Serve. It was the last gig I went to in London.
Employed to Serve in London.
Yeah. That was the last gig, yeah.
Luke, do you still play guitar?
I do, yes.
What's your go-to album to jam along to?
Oh, man. I don't really jam to albums, really. My eldest daughter, she's learning to play drums. So she's 11. She's just done her grade 2. She's working on her grade 3 now. So she's getting good, and we jam together now. So that's
That's gonna be quite a cool feeling.
Oh man, that's
It's cool. Yeah, so she's got like a little setup in her room, and I just got like I got rid of all my gear. I used to have like gigging stuff, all my Marshall stack and everything. I sold it all. Kept like my guitars and my pedal boards and stuff. But I just got like a little orange combi thing with a few effects on it, and just like I just got that set up in her room, and she's got an electric kit, and we just run it through her
nice
little PA thing and just have a little jam every so often. I mean, normally like I normally like jam whatever she's learning. So if she's like, you know, what's she been learning? She's been learning like stuff like REM and what else?
Yeah, Luke here teaches drums too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I teach drums and teach guitar. So it's pretty brilliant. Good.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Yeah.
How do you find
about
that?
The groove. Yeah, great. I definitely love seeing that there's so many people interested in learning music, no matter what age, but especially the younger kids that have that influence from their parents mainly.
Keeps them off these things.
Yeah,
definitely. And it broadens my horizons. Like, it helps me also, because I have to learn different material I might not listen to.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I was telling Gavin that the amount of kids, young teenagers in particular, that are heavy into Metallica, Black Sabbath, AC/DC, Judas Priest.
Well, I don't force it at all. I listen to all sorts of stuff. And Ivy's like, she's got her, I've got two girls. It's the older one that's learning drums. She plays guitar a bit as well, but she, I can hear her in her room, like, listening to stuff.
Yeah.
And, I can hear, like, she listens to, like, a lot of newer bands. So she'll listen to, like, I don't know if you've heard Sleep Token. She listens to them.
Yeah.
She listens to, like,
you've worked with them too, right?
Yeah. I've done stuff for them. Bring Me the Horizon. But then she'll listen to, like, Linkin Park, and then she'll be like listening to like Metallica, or like sometimes I've grown there, she's listening to Slipknot. I'm like, this is cool.
Oh, the dad nod seal of approval outside then, the room.
Like, she's listening to like old Slipknot and stuff, because she's like, she's into the drummers. That's like, she's into the drumming.
Yeah.
So she's like, she'll listen to like Eli Casagrande, if you know him.
He's going to Slipknot.
It's not confirmed, but it is. Everyone knows that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They had posted a picture the other day of a ProMark stick broke.
Yeah,
we
all
know that that's who it is.
Yeah, no, I saw that. It's so funny that like Sepultura remembers he'd be doing this like final tour, and like he's like, I can't do it because I've got other commitments. And at the same time that Slipknot are like getting ready to do this tour.
But even the whole thing about Jay leaving that time, it was strange. You know, like there's obviously a lot more to it. You know,
I think it's funny that the wheel has sort of turned that Grayson Newdickman, who was in Suicidal Tendencies, has replaced Eli as the drummer in Sepultura.
That's right, you've seen that.
Eli has gone to Slipknot.
Yeah.
And now Jay is playing with Suicidal Tendencies.
It's like the NFL draft.
I've not met any of these. I've did some work with the bass player from Slipknot, V-Man, but I don't really talk to him that much now since we did the project. He's a hard man to get hold of. Lovely guy.
Yeah.
But extremely hard to get hold of. And even if he knew what was going on, he wouldn't tell me.
Yeah, I'm sure it's tough when you got that schedule going on.
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. Definitely. I can imagine it's crazy.
Last question then, Luke. If you had the power to get five musicians into a room to record an album, who would they be?
Dead or alive? You can have your pick.
Five.
Name a band, you know, a piece of band together. You can pick and choose from bands in every genre.
Like a mixture of musicians together.
Dream team.
Oh my God, this is crazy. Okay. Dimebag Darrell.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's the obvious. It's got to be up there, isn't it? Dimebag. I should say Vinnie Paul, really, shouldn't I? But I'd say, like, I'd love to see, like, Dimebag and Joey Jordison together.
I was just going
to
say Joey. Ooh. I just was going to say Joey.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Bass player, Cliff Burton, obviously.
Yeah.
And then vocals. Oh, man. Let's say someone like... But Chester from Linkin Park. They're all dead musicians, basically.
Yeah.
But I'm just like thinking of...
That would be something else.
Yeah.
He's not dead and he's amazing. Max Cavalera. But like Max Cavalera, like Chaos AD era Max Cavalera.
Wow.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be pretty damn cool.
It's very rare that like you get like, you know, you have like these sort of side project bands that come out with like random musicians.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you've heard, you know, obviously like Down would be one of them.
Yeah, from Phil and that. Yeah.
Which, like, but like a lot of them, they, you know, it's like, oh, you listen to them, you're like, yeah, but they're not as good as the actual bands that they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard Killer Be Killed? They're a great band.
I've heard the name, but I haven't listened to much of their stuff.
Yeah, that's Max from Sepultura and the guy from Dillinger Escape Plan. And is it one of the guys from Mars Volta, I think, as well? The drummer, I think it might be the drummer from Mars Volta.
Dave Ellich played in that band.
Oh, man, that first record. Listen to that first record. It's so good.
Damn.
Really good.
Man, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Luke, and we really appreciate your time. I know you're very busy, and best of luck in the future with Everton, and we will be keeping an eye on your work, and maybe we'll see it in Madrid, you never know, or maybe France. You never know. Luke, thanks
very
much.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, man.
Take it easy.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
That's all from That Sound podcast for this week. I hope you enjoyed the chat with Luke Preece as much as we did.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Fair play to Luke, and thanks again to Luke. It was actually an honour speaking to him for an hour, giving up his time. He's very busy. He's working with Queens of the Stone Age, I think, at the minute, and he was doing some work with Pixies as well. I really, really enjoyed it. As he was telling us, going to Donington as a 15-year-old in the rain, and then, you know, a couple of years later, you're in the pit with Metallica and you have thousands of people wearing your T-shirt and looking at your artwork behind Metallica as they play. Like, Jesus.
Talk about a full circle moment.
Full circle moment.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
For those of you who aren't familiar with Luke Preece, you can check out his work on his website, lukepreece.com. You can reach out to us on social media at That Sound Podcast, or you can send us an email, thatsoundpodcast@gmail.com. Send us any suggestions and send us some guest suggestions that you may like to see on the show. That's all from the pair of us for this week. We will see you next week.